And welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast on simplifying the complexities of multi-core processors with COTS single-board computers. I'm Chris Schufo, Group Editorial Director at Open Systems Media. Of pertinence to today's eCast are our magazines Military Embedded Systems, VME and Critical Systems, Embedded Computing Design, and PC 104 and Small Form Factors. It's a perfect storm of technical challenges. The market is demanding quicker end product releases. The complexities of processors are increasing exponentially, and at the same time, companies are shrinking the engineering resources available to design systems. And while you may have heard lots of interesting things about ARM, Intel, or TI processors since last month's Consumer Electronics Show, you may have overlooked the original feature-packed RISC microprocessor company, Freescale Semiconductor. Starting out as Motorola, Freescale has consistently driven the market for what I call all-in-ones, with their 6811, 68HC11 series, followed by the PowerQuick, the PowerQuick series of 32-bit microcontrollers, and on and on. Today, the company's Core IQ family is hugely popular, is loaded with goodness that makes today's embedded systems easier to design, and is soon set to wow the market again with the addition of the much-loved AltaVec vector processing DSP engine. Our sponsors, Freescale, Eurotech, and Emerson Network Power, have joined forces today to provide standards-based solutions that ease the make versus buy decision and simplify embedded designs. The Core IQ multi-core processor roadmap will be presented, which is absolutely fascinating, and we'll have a discussion on some of the new twists on some old standby off-the-shelf form factors that you may have thought you knew everything about already. Hint, I'm talking about ComExpress. Think again and listen up. Before we begin, some housekeeping items. Today's total briefing will consume about 50 minutes, leaving us 10 minutes or so for questions at the end. On the audience console window before you, I encourage you to note a couple of buttons, the Enlarge Slides button and the Forward to a Friend button. With the latter, you can send an email to someone inviting them to participate live in this very eCast. As well, you'll need to have all pop-up blockers disabled or at least allow pop-ups from ON24, our service provider. You'll also find on your console window a button that allows you to enter questions in real time. This is often the most interesting part of the eCast, that's for our Q&A. We'll do our best to address all questions during the closing Q&A session. And if you have a question intended for a specific speaker or company, please so note at the very beginning of your question. That'll help me out. And if you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, the windows, the audio, etc., one of our technicians will respond back to you privately during the eCast when you post a question. And note that as much as we'd like to, we may not get to all of your questions today. In that case, someone may get back to you after the eCast with more information. Our sponsors have also asked us to insert a short survey at the end of today's eCast. I do hope you'll take the 30 seconds or so, probably less, required to check the boxes. That'll also help us out. And oh yes, before I forget, this eCast will be posted online within 24 hours. Generally, it's done the same business day. More details at the end. So are we ready? I've talked enough. Let's go ahead and begin. Our first speaker today is Glenn Beck, Segment Marketing Manager, Single Board Computing and Aerospace and Defense Markets. Glenn is a 30-year veteran in the semiconductor market, working for Freescale Semiconductor / formerly Motorola. He has held positions in design and product engineering, operations management, and sales and marketing. His present focus is providing solutions based upon the power architecture microprocessors for the single board computer and aerospace and defense markets. Glenn holds a BSEE from Texas A&M University and an MBA from Texas State University. Glenn, please get us rolling.
Well, thank you very much, Chris, and it's a pleasure to be presenting today. So hopefully what you will come out of here understanding is what we've done with the roadmap and then how Emerson and Eurotech have taken advantage of the feature sets that we offer on the Core IQ family. So the agenda is I will speak about the Core IQ processors and speak a little bit detail regarding high assurance computing inside those processors. Next, Haritha will speak about the ComExpress platform and specifically how it potentially is the quickest way for you to get to the market. And then Adam will speak about what we've done specifically around pinout and definitions to take advantage of the SoC devices that we have. So let's get started here. There's some interesting dynamics happening into the marketplace that you as OEMs face every day. One, in my simple survey of the market, I've found that hardware engineering resources are now about 25% of the total resources available inside of the companies. The rest of those resources tend to be dedicated to software engineering and systems engineering. So the amount of manpower resource available about designing full-up systems has decreased. Obviously, the things that we're doing in the marketplace in terms of the complexity of the processors are increasing rapidly. We have devices from one core to eight cores with more cores seen in the future. Obviously, you're dealing with high-speed I.O. in terms of 5 gigahertz PCI Express and rapid I.O. We're now at DDR3 looking at DDR4. And obviously, the challenges of those high-speed signals is going to be more complex for OEMs to keep up with. And then there's the pressure of the market of getting more products out into the market in a very, very competitive environment. And what we found is the single board computing market, as illustrated by Emerson and Neurotech, really addressed those issues in terms of the complexities of these products. They defined systems or standards around integrating these complex processors into their systems and do things in setting standards in the marketplace. So clearly we find at Freescale working with vendors such as Emerson and Neurotech really helps you, the OEM, get to the market quicker. So let's briefly look at the roadmap. The way to read this roadmap is across the bottom as you move to the right is increasing performance. We do that classically through a number of ways. One, improved transistor technology as we have gone from 150 nanometer to 90 nanometer to 45 nanometer, which is in production today. And also in terms of increasing system performance, either in the form of adding more cores to the device or improved system performance as related to how the high-speed I.O. get onto these devices. And as Chris alluded to, we concentrate on putting all those onto a single monolithic piece of silicon. As you move up the left side of the roadmap, we also increase performance, typically by terms of adding more cores to the device and increasing the frequency of the device. And then down that left side is also decreased in power. So what we've designed is a series of processors built around power envelopes. So that first row is 5 watts and less, and as you can see, there are close to 8 to 9 devices that are in single and dual core devices that are 5 watts and less. The P2 series is 10 watts and less, the P3 15 watts, and the P4 and P5 series, which have both dual core and 8 core versions, is in that 30 watt envelope. So we concentrate on getting the maximum level of performance within very specific power envelopes. And I can assure you that we look at how to increase that system performance in there, and I will speak about that. In addition, we recently announced bringing Altavec forward, moving it forward to the Core IQ family. And unlike previously where we brought out a processor about every 18 months with a new version of Altavec on it at higher speeds, you will be seeing from Freescale a whole series of devices at a whole series of power and performance points that have that Altavec engine in it. And the reception of that announcement, that technology direction, has been very good. So let's look specifically. I'm a semiconductor guy, so obviously I want to show something about block diagrams. And fundamentally what I want you to think about is we have essentially now the same issue that you've had in the hardware world for many years, and that is how to eliminate bottlenecks and manage bottlenecks inside of a system. Well, it turns out Freescale has to do that as well. And I thought I would talk about the key elements that we concentrate on for the elimination of bottlenecks and moving data in and out of this device. So the key element of the system is the power architecture cores. That's a 32-bit superscalar out-of-order transaction machine. It's not an in-order machine like other architectures are. And as you can see here on this particular device, the P4080, with the 8 in the nomenclature, meaning 8 cores, we have 8 cores sitting on this device. And if you remember from the previous slide, that is in a maximum of 30 watts, with each of those cores running at 1.5 gigahertz. There's also a memory hierarchy system of L1, L2, And we've now included front side L3 on our devices prior to going out to the main memory. In embedded IOs in terms of UARTs and serial ports, USB, general purpose IOs will always be included on our processors as they have found a real niche in terms of embedded processing and moving kind of low-level data in and out of these processors. Hardware accelerators, and as it relates to whenever we can find means by which to offload packets that are coming into these processors onto dedicated hardware accelerators, that does a couple things for us. One, in terms of we can process those packets in a fewer number of transistors, and in doing so, we're able to decrease the overall power as opposed to doing it in a general purpose core such as the power architecture. The other element is the high-speed I/O of getting into these devices in regards to Gen 2 PCI Express and Rapid I/O. As you note on this device, it actually has dual 10 gigabit Ethernet on it as well as a number of Ethernet ports on it. And then the item that's connecting all these devices, which really as you now think about the data that's moving in, coming in from the I/O is 64-bit bidirectional PCI Express running at 5 gigahertz. There's 64-bit high-speed data coming in from the memories, and there's considerable amount of speeds in terms of moving in and out from the core to the L2. And what connects all these devices is that fabric. That fabric is a non-blocking crossbar fabric. Each port of that fabric is 128-bit, and depending on the speed of that fabric, it can run up to 96 gigabits per second. So in essence, we're moving all this data through that fabric as we try to create this balanced architecture. And then finally, what I speak about is the assurance computing. That is the ability of this device with its millions and millions of transistors to put itself into a protected state so that it prevents from the loss of data and threat of detection. And I'd like to speak a little bit about that, of what we're doing around assurance computing. At the risk of, I've been working with this for quite a while, and we used to refer to it as trust architecture, but I really like the definition that is now coming out of the NSA, and essentially this is their chart. As it relates to assured computing, and they speak about 60%, over 50% of the PCs now have some virus associated with it. Every kind of network traffic is being attacked. And so they speak about high assurance platforms, and the key components of those platforms are those six items listed here in terms of embedded security module, device hardware in terms of the ability to protect keys that are important to you, the ability of the system to constantly be monitoring itself in terms of software. In multi-core environments, you're really dealing with how do I partition these cores from each other so that things that are happening in one core are not impacting activities in the other core? Do I have the ability to remotely determine if that device has not been tampered with? And so in terms of that, also in terms of central administration. And so as I looked at this definition that the National Security Agency has developed, I can see some real aspects that we have embedded in our processor that respond to this requirement. So fundamentally, we look at how do we protect against threat of functionality. We don't want the user to ever lose control of that device to any unfriendly user. The data inside these devices, in some respects, is some of the most important data we have. And do we have the ability to keep public data in a separate domain from our most secret data as well? And then, of course, the ability of the device not to lose its uniqueness, that people can't come in and engineer the device to the point of creating a separate. And we find this true not only in the aerospace and defense industry, but now across all industries of the need to have this assured computing. So we rely on a secure boot capability, and I'm going to talk a little bit how we go about doing that. We rely on strong partitioning of the system in terms of how do we separate cores and I/O from each other, as well as threat detection of if a physical attack comes to this device, we have the ability to recognize that attack and take the device into take all the memory regions to a one or zero state. And then, of course, remotely, do I have the ability to come into the device, to debug the device, and know that I'm the only user associated with that. So let's look at a couple of the attributes that we have in this. One, in terms of secure boot. So you, in essence, have two keys. There's the public key, which you're allowed to embed in the processor. You actually fuse it into a set of fuses that we have is not only the public key, but also the identification of the device and the manufacturer, as well as the private key, which is kept in some vault. And in the process of creating an image that you want to use as you boot up, and that image may be a Wind River or Green Hills or a Linux version of that image, is that you go through a hashing algorithm that then is put onto the front end of that image. And then as the device loads up, it goes through an algorithm to compare the hashing of that you've created and make sure that it is one that matches that you know to be secure, and the device is then brought up into that secure boot state. That crypto key is also can be used in terms of other memories, other applications that you load, as well as other OSs that you load. So it's not just for the initial boot up operation, but you can use it for all software applications you have. Once we have successfully booted up the device, it's in a trusted state, we then begin the process of creating policies across the device in terms of what cores have what regions that they may have access to. So in this example, where all the items in blue are items that we have identified to a particular partition 1, items in orange are those items we've identified in partition 2. And as you see, we have the ability to identify not only memory regions to very specific areas, but also I/O regions to very specific partitions. So you're able to bring this device up and separate each one of those I/Os that runs its own software, its own applications on top of it in a secured state, and know that if a packet comes in, it's only granted access to where it's been given privilege to. So we think we have done a lot in terms of meeting the NSA's requirements of creating high-assurance computing without compromising the performance that you expect out of our devices. So in quick summary, we're proud of this family of processors. We know the marketplace is taking advantage of it in terms of its achieving the size, weight, and power environments that you have out there, whether you're in aerospace or defense or in designing PLCs for the industrial market. It's a full scalable architecture ranging from 1 core to 8 cores, 800 megahertz to 2 gigahertz in performance on each core. And we put in the architecture the ability to have a high assurance architecture such that your device indeed and your system is unique to you. We're pleased with the OS support we get from all the OS vendors from Green Hills, Enea, Mentor, QNX, and Wind River, and of course the two partners that are joining us today, Eurotech and Emerson. So I think it's now time to let's turn the stage over to Haritha, and if you could let us know what you're doing with this fine processor.
Glenn, before we go ahead and do that, I'd like to read Haritha's bio, if we could. So, if you'll allow me, our second speaker today, by the way, thank you very much, Glenn. The roadmap, it's very interesting. I'm anxious to see more of this revealed, especially as the Altavec gets integrated back into Core IQs. So, as Glenn said, our second speaker today is Haritha Treadway, product manager at Eurotech in Columbia, Maryland. Haritha is responsible for her company's portfolio of embedded boards, based on the market's latest technology. She has a background in electrical engineering and has over 10 years of experience in the technology sector. Haritha, we're ready for you.
Great. Thanks, Chris, and good afternoon, everybody. I'm going to spend some time talking about why ComExpress, the form factor, made sense for us to bring out the capabilities of Core IQ. Glenn gave a great summary of the key advantages and features of Core IQ, so I'm going to talk about why we chose ComExpress to work with this platform. So obviously, as Glenn said, the big differentiator here is, you know, this platform has been optimized for performance as well as power and size. And this really, from your tech's perspective, this is really our bread and butter, is how to optimize the performance, bringing out the full capabilities of a processor while still taking, being mindful of the power consumption, the power management capabilities. And Core IQ definitely, I mean, and the Comm Express form factor definitely let us do that. One key way is that it let us deliver the full capabilities of the processor, including the 8 core features of the P4080, as well as the multiple PCI Express connections and the various standard IOs such as Ethernet and USB and SATA and multimedia right out of the gate. So these are supported as a standard, so we were able to implement them, integrate them very quickly and very seamlessly into these modules. And so it became designing became very straightforward. So when we deliver our products, you can be sure that we have delivered the most capabilities of the Core IQ processor family. The other key advantage that we felt was with using Comm Express is that we can really optimize for power usage. And that's kind of the one of the key benefits of the Comm Express form factor is you got the compact size, but you have multiple data communication channels, so you can spread out power consumption usage and design for that. And I'll go into some of our products. So we're getting down to below 5 watts of power consumption while still offering the dual core capability and all the networking capabilities, and that's very impressive, and we're able to do that through this standard. And then finally, small size designs are easily supported. Whether it's the basic or compact solutions that we're offering, these lend themselves to battery operator space-constrained devices, and you can see it in the market that those are becoming they're becoming more and more in demand. There's constantly a strain on getting things smaller and thinner and lighter and less noisy, and coupling the Core IQ processors with Comm Express let us do that in a very efficient way. Another set of key benefits, which are big, are the effects of cost and time to market. Everybody knows that cutting down costs and being efficient are critical for the embedded market. So with the Comm Express form factor and with the Core IQ processors, we can allow our OEMs to cut down on costs. Because this is a standard that we've built towards, optimized for Core IQ, it becomes very flexible and scalable within this platform. So we manage all the critical component life cycles, so the OEMs don't have to worry about it. Freescale offers long product life cycles, so that's a big assurance for markets such as medical or military, where you have to worry about recertifications every time you do a new design. Working with trusted vendors who have close partnerships with Freescale means that you can kind of have some ease of mind with that respect, and not have to worry about EOL concerns as much. On the development and design side, costs are definitely decreased by going with Comm Express versus, say, an SBC. We've optimized for the modules so the OEM can focus on their carrier board, which is where their main competency lies, and this reduces overall time to market as well as design and development costs. And then finally, just manufacturing. The carrier board for the OEM doesn't have to be as complex. They can have fewer layers on the carrier board, which decreases costs from the CM side. They can reduce inventory levels because they don't have to carry multiple levels of inventory, such as for an SBC. They can reuse carrier boards that can cut down on their inventory levels. And also just from the component management and procurement side, there's one vendor you're working with, and you just have to worry about whatever components are on the carrier. So overall, it just makes things a lot simpler, and that definitely helps us send those benefits over to the OEMs, and that was another key benefit to this standard. And then finally, the big one, the big main advantage, which Comm Express is, its flexibility. We talked about just the drive or the pressure to cut down on costs and to cut down costs for total ownership, and to extend the product life cycles of designs. And with the module design, we can certainly do that. These are very scalable. And, you know, if you look at what Glenn had for the Core IQ platform and the roadmap from the P1s to up to the P5, having this module standard allows you to migrate up in technology, that allows you to extend the life cycle of your products, make things more flexible, take advantage of new technologies as you need them without having to worry about doing a whole new redesign. You can use your same carrier board and support new technologies going forward. Another key advantage is if you're doing an enclosure, having, say, an SBC means you're going to have to customize your enclosure or redesign it every time you go with a new single board computer design. But with this form, with this standard, with COM module standard, your enclosure is what you need it to be. You design your enclosure for your market, not for the embedded solution that's going inside. So it's a big advantage there. We already talked about the portability. You know, you can migrate across the product line without doing much design work, and really this really lets you be application specific. You know, we've been seeing, like I said before, a big drive towards smaller form factors, more power efficiency. A lot of handheld battery devices are becoming in demand, and you want to take advantage of, say, the 8 cores that's offered by the P4080 or the dual cores, and still keep the low power consumption. And this was a COM Express allows you to do that, especially by working with Freescale to come up with these great solutions. So, just as a summary, you know, we at EuroTech, we like to use the term designing on a dime, and basically, what that kind of refers to is that if you look at the whole cycle of the productization from the design and development all the way through the operation side and then finally EOL, you really have to focus on cost and efficiency, and this table just gives you a comparison of how you can meet those needs and demands with the COM Express module, but you might not be able to meet them with the SBC. So with designing, you know, we've optimized the module to bring out the full capabilities of the Core IQ and optimized for power, so you can focus on your carry board design. With an SBC, you'd have to work a little bit closely with the take a little bit more effort to work with your hardware vendors and OEM just to populate, depopulate, maybe even customize the design. So it takes a little bit more time. The COM Express definitely gets you to market faster. On the factory side, you know, you reuse existing resources. You have a low system assembly cost, and that definitely makes things easier on the cost side. Whereas with SBC, you're pretty much introducing a new product every time you do a new SBC design. With the COM Express, you can, because you're reusing designs, it makes things a lot more smoother. On the operations and manufacturing side, it's fewer components to maintain, lower cost overall, less inventory, and then finally the big benefit is the end-of-life cost. Being able to scale to new technologies means you can extend your product life cycle, which you couldn't do before. And, you know, we've really been designing, working with Freescale to look across the Core IQ roadmap and seeing how we can help our customers move up the technology path as they need to. So, just to sum up, this last slide kind of reiterates what Glenn had shown before. This time we have power consumption on the bottom increasing as you go from left to right, and performance increasing on the y-axis as you go from bottom to top. And you can see we have EuroTech offers a nice list of products. If it's power that you're concerned about, our ADBC 7520 is based on the 1021. It gives you dual core capability, but it's under 5 watts of power consumption. But if you really want the 8 core capabilities, we can do that with the 7517. So it really, you know, this aligns nicely with the roadmap that Glenn presented, and we're excited about these products and look forward to the designs that are coming out of it. So with that, Chris, I'll pass it back to you. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Haritha. We appreciate it. Our third and final speaker today is Adam Auer, Marketing Manager at the Embedded Computing Business of Emerson Network Power. Adam is instrumental in product planning and development around COM Express and other small form factor boards. He holds a bachelor's degree from UC Santa Cruz and an MBA from Arizona State University. Adam, please go ahead and finish off our webcast.
Thank you, Chris. And Christine, I can't see what's really being pushed out to the audience right now, so please feel free to jump in and help if I get off track. As Chris mentioned, my name is Adam Auer. I work at Emerson Network Power in the marketing group. And the first thing I would like to introduce to you is Emerson Network Power proper. It may not be the first name that comes to mind when you think of embedded computing, but we have been in the embedded computing business for over 30 years with our companies that we have acquired. Some of those names you might recognize are Motorola Computer Group, Force Computers, Prolog, Artisan, and others. So, in fact, we had the joy of working side-by-side with Freescale back when they were Motorola. So we do have a long legacy of designing in power architecture, and we are happy to participate in this new venture, which is the CoreIQ processors on the ComExpress form factor. So a little more about Emerson. Emerson's a very diverse company with corporate sales of $21 billion in 2010. We have a global presence with best cost design and manufacturing facilities on every continent, and the widest range of embedded computing products available, all the way from ATCA blades and telco-rated racks down to compact PCI, VME boards, motherboards, ComExpress modules, and the CoreIQ modules that we'll be discussing now. And Christine, can you confirm what slide we're on?
Hey, this is Chris. I can go ahead and do that. I can help you out. We'll ask Christy to go ahead and change the slides for you if you just say next slide. So the slide that the audience is seeing is entitled ComExpress Pins and Headers.
Thank you. Somehow my little presenter got out of sync over here. So ComExpress Pins and Headers, what I'm here to talk about today. For those who don't know, ComExpress come in a variety of type. The two connectors you see on your screen are the standard ComExpress connectors. They have four banks of pins noted A, B, C, and D across the top. Now, depending on what you have on those pins determines what type you're using, and the ComExpress spec defines seven types currently, I believe. We're going to talk about some pinouts that are not on that spec that we have put together to make these CoreIQ modules really shine in this form factor. So if you want more information on those PCMIG specs, you should visit PCMIG.org. The pinouts we're about to discuss are compatible with the PCMIG specs, but they are not compliant with the PCMIG specs. And so I am still trying to figure out my presenter button. Sorry. Just moving on to the next slide, please. So the goals of the pinout at the time of undertaking this operation, we had the goals of bringing CoreIQ processors onto this very popular ComExpress form factor. And beyond that, maybe a goal to just offer a more processor-agnostic type pinout. So to do that, we first had to identify those pins that were x86-specific and remove them from the pinout, and then add in some of the more common embedded interfaces, like IE1588 and UART's SerDes lanes. So let's dive into the pinouts now and see what we came up with. So you should see a lot of colors on your screen now. This would be the P1022 ComExpress module on the left-hand side, compared to the PCMIG Type 6 pinout spec on the right-hand side. And as you can see, there is a host of interfaces coming down all over the screen. The things are broken up into the A, B, C, and D columns that we saw earlier on the ComExpress image. So we have banks of pins A, B, C, and D, and I've laid them out so that you can see where we have interfaces and where the PCMIG spec has interfaces. So one of the first things I noticed when working on this slide was that the P1022 ComExpress implementation has a lot of white space on it. and that was a little scary. That white space is no connects, meaning we are not using those pins with this module. This isn't a bad thing. This is a typical thing. When you bring a processor and implement it into a type, you typically don't use every single interface that's available in that type. So if we were comparing this to an actual implementation on the right-hand side, you would see some white space on the right-hand side too. So with that explained, I'd like to go through and kind of touch on some of the key points here in the pinout. First of all, in column A, you can see we have a GigE, which is a gigabit Ethernet, in the same location as the Type 6 GigE. Then if you go down on both, you'll notice we have SATA interfaces in the same location as the Type 6. Now under SATA, we have AC97 audio, which is an x86 specific codec, so we do not have that on any of the types we're going to go over today. So you see a white space on the left-hand side there. Then going down further, you'll see the USB lining up. We have USB in the same locations. We have PCI Express lanes in the same locations, LVDS channel, Spybus, VGA, SDIO. So wherever possible, whenever we have the same interface, we've kept it on the same pins. And what you don't see on here is the power and ground pins, where we've kept those 100% identical. Let's move over to column C and D. So in the PICMIG spec, column C and D is where you'll see most of the variation between the types. So you'll also see the most variation between the Core IQ and the PICMIG types on these two columns. So on the P1022, for instance, we brought down another gigabit Ethernet connection. We did keep one digital display interface. If you look over at the Type 6, you'll see there's USB 3.0, a couple more PCI lanes, and PCI Express graphics. So we dropped the PCI Express graphics because that's quite x86-centric. And instead, we had some extra pins to work with there, so we were able to put in a couple more UARTs, more IRQ lanes, another Spybus, and an I2S audio. So this enables embedded designers to push some of the more common required things down to the carrier, like COM ports, more NVRAM, etc. So let's go to the next slide now, and I'll stop monkeying with the slide projector. So on the next slide, you should see the Core IQ P2020 processor compared to a Type 2 from PICMIG. Now we're looking at the pinouts that you get from the 2020 processor, which is the sub-10-watt dual-core processor that Glenn was discussing earlier. We're comparing it to a Type 2, which is the most popular PICMIG type from the last generation. So there should be a lot of success on the Type 2 in the past. We'll see how it goes going forward, of course. So across the top on the 2020, on the left-hand side, you can see we have three gigabit Ethernets going down to the carrier. There is an interface in the middle there in column B that I didn't talk about yet. That's the IEEE 1588 real-time clock signal, which is very important for network sync operations. You can synchronize your nodes down to sub-microseconds. It's also important in enabling industrial Ethernet protocols and anything that requires a high level of real-time clocking. Moving on down, you'll see we have the USB in the same location, the PCI Express lanes, the LVDS, the Spybus again matching up, and on the right side, you'll see we have the UARTs for those COM ports and the Spybus and additional lanes going down to the carrier again. We also have the MDIO and more IRQ signals to interrupt back to the CPU. So I want to move on now to the P4080, which is the next slide. And the P4080 module was very interesting once we got these pins laid out. I'm comparing it now to a PICMIG Type 5. This is a I think it's probably the fairest comparison out of the PCMIG family, because the PCMIG Type 5 is designed around multiple gigabit Ethernets and a lot of PCI Express lanes. So we have the same gigabit Ethernet basic lanes on the P4080. We do not bring down all the PCI Express lanes that you see there. Instead, we bring down 12 SerDes lanes, which are high-speed serial interconnects. The good part about the SerDes lanes is that they are programmable at boot, and they can be programmed into one of several interfaces of the designer's choosing. So at boot, the P4080 can check its boot parameters and configure these lanes into 10 gig ZAUI Ethernet, serial rapid I/O, SGMI-I for more Ethernet ports on the carrier, or PCI Express lanes. So these could be configured into the PCI Express lanes, but they're so flexible that they can also be configured into those other interfaces I just mentioned. This is exciting for designers because they have the opportunity to bring some of these high-speed specialized interfaces directly off the carrier to the CPU without having to put a PCI Express bridge in place or plug a third-party card into a PCI Express socket. That hardware can go right on the carrier now if they so desire. So there's potential hardware savings as well as development time savings there. We are also able to add one more UART. We do have some local bus pins in addition on the P4080. We have a tamper detect signal, which plays back into that assurance computing topic that Glenn was talking about. And we have the MDIO and IRQs enabling you to put another 3 or 4 gig Ethernets down on the carrier if you so desire. So we think this is going to be a very exciting package, and we're going to see some really innovative designs built up around it. And let's go to the next slide. So we set out to develop the pinouts that would be a little more processor agnostic and that would highlight some of the embedded interfaces without being x86 specific. And I'd say we were pretty successful in that attempt. In the meantime, we also enabled dramatically increased flexibility around these configurable SerDes lanes. So in that one type, we have 12 different ways you can boot the P4080 and essentially send a different mix of interfaces to your carrier that matches your specific design. We did achieve 100% compatible power and ground pinouts, so you won't be destroying anything. If you happen to plug one of these modules into a card in the field, everything will line up. You won't destroy anything. You will have limited functionality, however, because you won't connect to some of those great embedded interfaces that we added. We did stay 100% compatible on the common interfaces like SATA and USB, like I hope you saw in those pictures. And, of course, we stayed mechanically identical, which means all the work that's been done designing heat sinks, heat plates, chassis around the ComExpress form factor, all that work can be leveraged around these modules now. So the good news is that CoreIQ architecture is now available on ComExpress modules for the first time. And another thing I should point out, with all this compatibility, all these compatibility bullets, et cetera, the pinout that I just described is used by both Eurotech and myself, so our modules are truly interchangeable and interconnectable. For more information about pinouts, please visit PCMIG.org to get the spec on that to see how the ComExpress pins are defined. If you'd like to see more about this CoreIQ implementation, please contact myself at Emerson Network Power or Glenn Beck at Freescale or Haritha at Eurotech. And I would like to move to the next slide. Here's just a quick summary of the CoreIQ modules that Emerson Network Power has developed. We have the ComEx P4080, the P2020, and the P1022. The first two are released now in shipping. They are being featured in some development kits that you can order through Freescale. The last one will be shipping towards the end of March. And we're very excited to see the market uptake on these. And having a convenient development kit should accelerate people's experience with the hardware. And we hope that by putting it on a ComExpress module, we'll make it even more accessible. So thank you very much for your time. I'm going to turn it back over to Chris Schufo now for some questions and answers.
Thank you very much, Adam. And I'd like to thank all of our speakers today. That was fascinating with regard to the ComExpress mapping, and we've got a lot of questions pertaining to that. So without any further ado, let's go ahead and get straight to the questions. So the first question is going to go straight back to Glenn. What is the difference between trust architecture and assurance computing, please? Freescale. Glenn, do you have your phone off mute, please? There you go.
You know, we for a while now, I've been talking about trust architecture in regards to the CoreIQ family. And frankly, today was kind of my education of not only people in the on the phone call, but to myself as well. And as I learned more about what was being done in the market, high assurance really is a more comprehensive definition than what we've been using on trust architecture. So frankly, it was more of an adoption of that philosophy. And then as I investigated high assurance as proposed by the NSA, I found that indeed what we have done inside the processor does meet a lot of those criteria. So frankly, it's a naming convention of which one I think is more appropriate as it relates to high assurance computing and the things we've done in CoreIQ.
Okay, very good. So keep that in the back of your mind, Glenn, because we've got at least two other questions that drill down in a little more detail about what you just spoke of. But for now, I'd like to pass it off to Eurotech for the next question. Can you describe application examples for multi-core, specifically 8 cores, Haritha?
Sure, Chris. So I think we've been finding that really it's about running multiple operating systems. So one scenario you can do is you can couple all 8 cores and just have like a high-profile operating system. These support Freescale Linux and VxWorks in some cases. So that's an application. Another one, another example might be, say, in the medical or in military where you have one core that's running VxWorks, then you might have some specific applications that are really OS independent, say something that's run using MATLAB, running on the other 4 cores, and then the remaining cores, you're plugging in various different I/O and scanners, and that's really where the flexibility comes in, and then being able to support such a broad range of I/O lets us really make things very flexible. And so it just comes down to having multiple operating systems running if needed and just having multiple processes running without interrupting each other. And I know that Glenn talked about it a little bit, but being able to do that without having interference and being able to do that securely, that's those are some requirements in some ways that folks are using it.
Okay, very good. I'm going to toss another couple questions to Glenn in that regard in just a few moments. But first, Glenn, the key question is, when will you, as in Freescale, be announcing products with AltaVec?
So if you remember, last September we did a technology announcement around taking AltaVec to the CoreIQ family of processors. And in participating in that announcement were the key OS vendors in terms of Green Hills and Wind River, Qunix and Nia, as well as Emerson also participated in that announcement. While I cannot specifically state when that when additional information will be rolling out, you know, there's kind of this old marketing rule that if you're not talking about it every 6 to 8 months, you'll start losing the momentum you have on that. So suffice it to say, Chris, there will be some announcements coming out shortly from us regarding additional details of how we're taking that technology to this product family.
Okay, very good. So, Adam, there are a number of questions here that are all very similar. I'm going to see if I can group them together to economize watching the clock here. So the questions are all very similar in terms of, do you plan to make these CoreIQ ComExpress pinouts a PCMIG standard? Are you currently working with PCMIG on this? Are they standardized by some other standards body? And what other vendors are supporting this besides yourselves and Eurotech?
Okay, that's a lot of questions. We have a desire to become standardized. We are not currently in PCMIG. We do not have a working group started in PCMIG or a submission to start a working group at this time. We did jointly publish a white paper to PCMIG last year describing the intent of the pinout, and that was well received. At this time, there's not a standards body overseeing the pinout. It's being overseen by Freescale, essentially. So between Freescale, Emerson, and Eurotech, those are the only parties using it right now that aren't end customers or designers of carrier cards. Of course, we would welcome more participation from more folks, but we haven't formalized that process yet.
Okay, very good. I do have a quick follow-up. I'm sure the audience members and myself are wondering, is there a website URL that you can make available at some point where we can go and get these specs or other information? Calling you and Eurotech and Freescale is what you'd said, but is there some place that's easy to go on the Internet to find this information?
Well, I do have a design guide and pinout available for the Emerson modules, which by definition is the same as these pins we've just talked about and that everyone is using. I believe there's a plan to publish a public pinout on the Freescale website in short order.
Okay.
I'll let Glenn talk to that.
Okay. Well, we'll get back to Glenn on that one just a moment, but here's some of those questions with regard to trust and high assurance, et cetera. And there's a few more questions, Glenn, that are all very similar. And this one is, since you brought up the high assurance and NSA on slide 8, has the P4080 been taken through a common criteria evaluation for a customer solution? Good question.
Yes, Chris, I saw a couple of those questions around that as well as regarding DO254. So, you know, the FFA and NSA and the EASA, the European Consortium government regulation around airframe, have all taken a high degree of interest in how does one certify multi-core processing. And the two primary issues that we are both concerned with, and when I say both, I'm talking about, you know, the key engineering communities from Boeing and Airbus and GE Aviation and goes on and on, is around a couple subjects. One, in terms of the petitioning, is how do I ensure that cores are not interacting with each other? And the other issue is around determinism of paths. So can I speak about a worst-case path? And the challenge there is around shared resources that you have in the processor. While we have not formally submitted a P4080 through that process, and frankly, we would not submit it. It would be done via an end user as well as a key OS vendor. I can say that considerable amount of work is being done in relationship to work that Green Hills is doing, who has created certified OSs before in this marketplace, as well as the other airframe manufacturers, of how we go about the process of certification. So while nothing is available now, we have started that process in understanding the problem and then how to achieve the certification of it. So I suspect before the end of the year, you will actually start seeing some announcements around how we've managed to certify multi-core processing to those specifications.
Okay, and there's a follow-up question here from an airframer company, but I'm not going to go ahead and read that. You may want to follow up with this company directly because they're going to drill down in a little bit more detail. So I'm going to mark that one as answered. But there is one follow-up similar to that. Does your assurance architecture conform to DO254 for certifiability or to ARINC 653 for hardware partitioning? Do you know?
Well, it does not at this moment, just simply because it has not been certified. We think it can be certified. Obviously, it needs to go through the process of with a particular vendor along with an OS vendor, because you don't certify, frankly, the processor standalone. It is done within a platform. So the work that's being done around those key issues I talked about in terms of partitioning and determinism of paths is work that's being done in conjunction with OS vendors to achieve that certification. So we are marching toward achieving that goal.
Okay, very good. Question for Eurotech. Are there standard carrier boards offered, or do customers have to design their own? And there's a follow-up one here. It says, the problem with ComExpress is that an end user needs to design their own application-specific carrier versus a stackable like PC104. What are your thoughts? So we're going to group these two questions together. Can you go ahead?
Sure. So we do offer standard carrier boards, and I think Adam mentioned that Everson Eurotech modules are interchangeable. There are Freescale development systems that are available that support both Emerson and Eurotech, and you can obviously switch modules. So we do, and Eurotech also does offer standard carrier boards, so we do that. With respect to the ComExpress versus PC104, I think ultimately it comes down to your requirements for the application. PC104, yes, you can buy, off-the-shelf carry boards, but really you're going to have to sacrifice, say, on space constraints and, again, to the small sizes. You have two connectors, right, on the PC104 standard, and those take up room. With ComExpress, you just have one. So you can really get into smaller designs. So if being able to – and ComExpress also gives you more I.O., we've been talking about the pinout and all the capabilities of the Core IQ that we can bring out, and we've been able to do that because the ComExpress standard supports that. So really, it's a trade-off that you have to make. Sure, you're going to have to design your own carry board, or you can work with carry board designs that might be done by vendors like Eurotech or Emerson. But if you really want those truly small space-constrained devices, then ComExpress has a definite advantage over PC104. So.
Okay, good. All right, watching the clock here, we've got the time for just a couple of more questions. I'm going to pose this one to Adam, and I'm going to group a bunch of them together. You said processor agnostic, quote unquote. What processor was ComExpress designed for? Who is the manufacturer, and what is the model number of the four-column PCMIG connector you talked about? And then finally, how can we, I guess the audience, be confident there will be an ecosystem support for designs based upon these pinouts with this connector? So three-part question, Adam. Can you handle that?
All right. I will. Thank you. First of all, the one I can't answer is the manufacturer and part number of the ComExpress connector. That could probably be found with a Google search. It's a pretty common part, and it's also included in the PCMIG spec. I will be happy to answer that offline, too. I'll get back to that person who answered that question. And then, processor agnosticism was some of the initial thinking that went into this process. And the question is, what processor was ComExpress designed for? And ComExpress, as defined by PCMIG, has always been designed for an x86 processor. So as those types have come out and been added, they've been following in lockstep with the releases of x86 processors and the new interfaces that come out on those. That makes it more difficult to use that spec as it is to use a different silicon. So what we've done is put more serialized I.O. down to the board instead of processor-specific I.O., and there's nothing that would keep a Broadcom or a Cavium processor from going onto one of these pinouts that we've defined. So I don't think we're really processor agnostic 100% at this point. I mean, that's a difficult thing to be, but we certainly got closer in this process.
Okay, very good. Well, we're out of time. We've got 1 minute after the hour, so although there are a few more questions in the queue here, we're going to have to forego those. And as I said at the beginning, we may not have had time for all these questions to be answered, and as appropriate, somebody may get back to you offline with answers. In fact, you just heard Adam say that he would get back to someone offline. I would like to thank all of our speakers today from Freescale Semiconductor, Eurotech, and Emerson Network Power, who helped make today's eCast a reality. course, I'd also like to thank all of you who are following along remotely. Thank you for sticking with us to the very end. This eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen within 24 hours. Often it's the same business day. Thank you all for attending. We're adjourned. Goodbye.